I'm Emily Rooney, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio. Well, the Mars rover Curiosity's voyage to Mars took more than 8 months, spanned 352 million miles. But the trickiest part of the whole thing was the landing, and that happened in the wee hours of the morning this morning. Curiosity weighs nearly a ton, and engineers invented this elaborate series of brakes and a supersonic parachute to kind of slow it down as it came near the surface of Mars. Now it's roaming around, packed with all kinds of scientific tools, cameras, a weather station, all sorts of cool stuff like that. Here to talk about this is Jeff Poffman. He's a NASA astronaut and professor in the Aeronautics and Astronautics Department at MIT. Welcome, Jeff.
Nice to be back, Emily.
Yeah, this really is cool.
Oh, cool is too easy a word. I mean, it's spectacular. Yeah. What they accomplished.
I mean, the precision of it to be able to, and then the other piece of it scoots away, you know, and leaves this rover. It's about the size of an SUV.
The whole thing looks like an incredible Rube Goldberg apparatus, doesn't it? and yet, every part of it makes sense because of all the problems that are involved in landing on Mars, and they all had to be solved. And every time we go to a larger and larger rover, the problems have to be solved in a slightly different way.
Controlling a computer from 352 million miles away.
In a sense, we weren't even really controlling it. It had to be all programmed in advance because it takes 15 to 20 minutes for the radio signals to go back and forth. So if you see that something's going wrong, it's already too late.
Yeah.
You've lost it. So no, it all has to be done in advance, and the entire process was automatic.
So what exactly are they going to be looking for? This Curiosity is going to be looking for plants, animals, water, signs of life. I mean, what?
The possibility for life, I think, is the best way to describe it. You know, we've had these two incredible rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, that have been going around for years now, and they've done an incredible job at reconnaissance, at looking at the geological composition, the type of rocks, the mineralogy. They were not designed to look for anything that's organic or has the potential to support life. I think it's important to understand that Curiosity is not there to find life. We sent the Vikings back in the 1970s, and they had three separate experiments to look for specifically signs of life. Two of them were definitely negative. One of them was kind of ambiguous. But the problem was that once they said, no, we looked for life, we didn't find it, people said, well, then what's the point of going?
Well, what is
the point? And so really Mars exploration languished for 20 years. What we're doing now is to try to get a much better understanding of Mars as a planet, both geologically, to learn about the history of Mars. We've certainly learned up to this point that Mars seems to, at some point in its past, have been very different than the cold.
Yeah, it's cold. What's the temperature
cold
there?
Life. Well, at times it gets up almost to 40, 50 degrees Fahrenheit, but that's only in a really, really hot summer day. Most of the time it's, well in below zero, sometimes down as much as 100 below.
Like right now, what would it be?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I don't know
particularly
what the season is. So somewhere on Mars, it's pretty cold.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Backside, as they say.
And the other thing that Mars had back then is probably had more of an atmosphere because we have seen now both from our spacecraft that are orbiting Mars and taking just the incredible high-resolution photography plus the rovers on the surface, there's lots of evidence that Mars once was covered with – parts of Mars were covered with large quantities of water, probably salt water. And we found that there's – a lot of water still on Mars. Over the past decades, a lot of work on biology of strange organisms here on Earth, we've really learned that any place on Earth where there is liquid water, we have found life, whether it's up on glaciers up in high mountains or in rock 2 miles below the Earth. And so it's possible that organisms did develop on Mars back then when it was more habitable, and maybe there are traces of them. Maybe some of them still exist underground. That's not specifically what Curiosity is going to look for. Curiosity really wants to look at the chemistry of mm-hmm. of Mars to see whether there are components that could support life.
How does it do that? I mean, can it dig? What kind of tools does it have?
Oh, yeah. It can dig. It can drill. It can rub away surfaces of rock. It has these rovers all have manipulator arms. But the neat thing about the Curiosity is attached to Curiosity, think of it as a toolbox. Yeah. And the manipulator arm actually has the capability of interchanging tools so that if you go up to a rock and the surface of the rock is all dusty, you put your little buffer tool on and you sort of scrape away the surface.
You blow away the dust first?
you actually scrape it away. It's like a rotary, sort of like what the dentists use to clean your teeth. Yeah. It's a little rotary thing. And then there's a drill so that you can drill into the rock. There's an X-ray spectrometer so that you can measure the chemical composition. But I think most exciting, interior to the rover, there's actually an organic chemistry laboratory, and there's a little hole in the top of the rover, and there's a scoop. That's the other thing you can have on the end of the arm, and it can go down, scoop up samples of rock or soil, and drop it into this laboratory, which will then perform an analysis and tell us what's really there.
I'm talking to Jeff Hoffman, who's a NASA astronaut and a professor of aeronautics at MIT. How does it get relayed? Is it through text? Is it through photographs? I mean,
ones and zeros.
What's the communication?
It's ones and zeros. I mean, it's typical digital binary information. Yeah. Typically the important thing is what's the type of information that's going to be sent back. And, of course, we'll have lots of really good pictures, high-resolution photography. There will be the information on the chemical composition of the soil and the rocks, which is what they're going to be looking for. And those are all numbers. And basically, numbers are digital. And you digitize the data and you send it back. And we have a system now, because there are so many satellites orbiting Mars, they can actually act as relays, and so they can get the data back, and Curiosity can also send data back directly. So, I mean, this is not new. I mean, we've been getting data back from Mars and other planets for a long time. One of the fascinating things, which I bet many people don't know about, I don't know when the pictures, high-resolution pictures, will start coming back, but when you look at the tracks that the Mars rover leaves, you'll see little dots and dashes, which are imprinted on the treads of the wheels of the rover. And in Morse code, the dots and dashes spell out JPL for the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which I thought was kind of neat.
That is cool. Yeah. I thought it was going to be Morse code for whatever life is there on Mars, and they were going to be able to read it in the dust and, you know, come on.
Well,
something a little more phantasmagorical.
If we could find the life there, it truly will be revolutionary. We have here on Earth one type of life which evolved based on DNA and the genetic sequences and 20 amino acids, DNA, RNA, and so forth. Is that the only type of life that's possible? You know, trying to figure out principles of universal biology when we only have one type of life is maybe a little bit like trying to figure out principles of universal linguistics if you only speak one language. You just can't do it. So that's one reason why the search for life on Mars has been such a point that everybody emphasizes. But it's important to remember that Curiosity is not there to find life on Mars. It's to look for potential
support system
conditions that could support life. And that also means that if people someday, or people go there, Mars does seem to have the constituents to be able to allow people to essentially live off the land, which is critical for, you know, when we think of all exploration that's been done here on Earth, if you have to carry everything with you, it's tremendously difficult and expensive, and you certainly can't talk about having a long-term scientific base on Mars if you have to continually resupply everything from the Earth. But there's water, there's hydrocarbons, there's energy, And if you have those things, we can basically
– if you have water.
Well, there is mortar. That we know. That we've already found out. You know, exactly where it is and how easy it is to get at, that's a subject for future research. But all the chemical constituents that we would need to produce food, oxygen, and the water we have, those are the things we need for life. And there's energy from the sun.
So, I mean – we were talking about this morning, though. I mean, what would be the point of sending people to Mars? I mean,
everything that we have learned about Mars and our probes that we put on the surface and around Mars, they get more and more sophisticated. And the more we learn about Mars, the more fascinating a place it is, the history of Mars, the possibility of life, but also how Mars evolved as a planet, why Mars is so different from the Earth. I mean, there's just so many things. And humans are just good at the sort of exploration that's involved in field geology, in hunting for fossils. I'm not playing down machines. I mean, I love the Mars rovers. They've done incredible jobs, and they've taken me as close to the surface of Mars as I'm ever going to get. But Mars is such a rich target of exploration that we really should be exploring it as well as is humanly possible. And ultimately, that means with people. You can go and talk to any of the scientists at JPL who have worked on this Curiosity. And I mean, it's incredible. Their accomplishments should be applauded. But every one of them will tell you, ultimately, they'd like to see people on Mars.
So what would that entail? I mean, right now they're talking about it could take as long as 18 months, if not longer, to get there. I mean, you're an astronaut.
Well, not 18 months. I mean, we can get there as fast as,
how fast?
As Curiosity. It's a trip of 7 to 8 months.
Yeah, okay.
But that's a lot.
The round
trip is certainly 16, 17 months. And
What would that be like, just preparing for that psychologically,
boy,
mentally? I mean, you've – even for a week or so in space, I mean, but – for 8 months, just one way? I mean, would you be going through?
There have been episodes in human exploration on this planet where people set out on ships and knowing that they would be out of sight of land for months at a time, not knowing if they were going to ever come back home. I mean, you know, Magellan set out with how many ships he came back? Well, he never came back, but one of his ships got back with – you know, a few dozen crew, and that was considered a great success. They lost most of their ships, most of their people. We don't quite have that tolerance for losing our people now, but it is hard. When you get in a ship, a spaceship, and you fire those engines on what we would call trans-Mars injection, that means you're leaving the Earth, you're on your way to Mars, you are basically on your own.
Can't change your mind.
In the way that no people have been before. You know, when you're up in the International Space Station for 6 months, but if it turns out that something breaks and you can't fix it, well, they'll send you a replacement the next time something goes up. You're on your way to Mars. Forget it.
Yeah.
What you have with what you have.
Would you have done it had you had the chance?
I would do it. I would do
You'd
it
still
now.
Do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I say, Mars is such a fascinating place. I mean, I look at Mars as the ultimate goal for human exploration with any technology that we can currently consider. I mean, it may be that someday, hundreds of years from now, we'll have new types of technology and we can talk about going out and exploring the moons of Saturn and beyond in the solar system. We can't even imagine how to do that now, but we can imagine going to Mars. And I think that as a goal, which, you know, I don't think that's going to be the first place that humans go when we finally get the ability once again to leave Earth orbit. I think probably we'll first go back to the moon. There's talk about visiting asteroids that come near the Earth. There's other things that we need to do to prepare ourselves. But ultimately, you scratch the skin of any space nut at NASA or in universities or in industry, you'll find Mars blood. I mean, everybody knows that Mars is the fascinating place which awaits us sometime in the future.
Mm. I mean, obviously we can't go to the sun. So right now, there's also Curiosity is going to be establishing some kind of a weather station. Do we know with any sort of certainty if there is a weather pattern there?
Yeah, actually, Mars does have weather. They've had huge dust storms on Mars, which totally cut out visibility. We're lucky there wasn't a dust storm going on when Curiosity came in for a landing. There's wind. There's erosion from dust. There have been pictures of beautiful Martian sunsets when you get clouds up in the sky. Not the same degree of weather that we have on Earth because the atmosphere is so thin. Yeah. I mean, the atmosphere on the surface of Mars is about the equivalent density of the atmosphere at 100,000 feet above the surface of the Earth. That's the problem with trying to land on Mars, why it's so hot. You know, we go through all of the deceleration and heavy heating when we come back in the shuttle or on a Soyuz or any of the spacecraft. That goes on at about 250,000 feet. And so you have to do that when you're entering Mars. The nice thing about coming back on Earth, though, is that as you get lower in the atmosphere gets thicker and thicker. So you can actually pop a parachute. And not only does it slow you down from supersonic speeds to subsonic, but it actually slows you down enough that you can land in the water on your parachute. At Mars, the atmosphere is so thin that you need the parachute to slow you down from supersonic speeds, but you're still going much too fast to land. So you have to drop the parachute and then fire your rockets. I mean, that's the reason for all of this complication. The smaller rovers, they could surround with airbags, and they basically just dropped them and they bounced. But Curiosity is too big for that. And
yeah,
so they
Curiosity
needed a new
weigh?
Technique. It's about a ton.
Yeah, a ton.
So, you know, think of a Volkswagen Bug on the surface of Mars. That's kind of what you have. Or a Mini Cooper.
Mini Cooper.
Yeah, my wife likes Mini Coopers, so we'll think of a Mini Cooper on Mars.
Is it actually tires or is it?
Well, not the sort of tires that you would go and get in a store here. But yeah, it has six wheels. They have a particular type of suspension system. They call it a rocker bogey. But six wheels, they're more or less metallic, and they don't have inner tubes or inflated air inside.
Well, what's keeping it there? I mean, is there?
Well, Mars has gravity. The gravity of Mars is about 40% the gravity on Earth. So things are lighter for a given mass. But it will move around just like a car. For instance,
but something
think of it as an all-terrain vehicle. Okay,
something really light though could float away.
Well, if the wind is blowing and you had a piece of paper on the surface, sure, it would blow away. But you're not going to blow away a one-ton Mini Cooper sitting on the surface.
How long will this be active? How long will Curiosity?
We don't really know. You know, the Mars rovers were. They had a warranty for 90 days, okay? And here we are, 7-8 years later, and one of them is still going strong. And so the Curiosity, its warranty is 2 years. That's what it was certified for. If it lasts 2 years, which we all hope it will, the chances are it'll be going for much longer. So we just have to wait and see. It'll take a little while for them to check it out, get it going, but the excitement is still ahead. So
yeah, I mean,
I'm really excited.
Cool.
The landing was just the first of the incredible accomplishments of this mission. And so let's stand by.
We're looking forward to getting all that data. All right, Jeff Hoffman, NASA astronaut and professor in the Aeronautics Department at MIT. Always a pleasure to have you here, Jeff.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Thanks for inviting me.
All right, and Kelly Crossley is back with me here in Studio 3. Kelly, landing a rover on Mars. That is unbelievable.
It really is, and we're going to be talking next about another kind of achievement. I know you've been watching the Olympics.
Emily. I am. I'm glued to the Olympics, Kelly.
Actually, I am too.
Good for you.
We've been talking with some folks from the Special Olympics.
Oh, I just met her out there.
Oh, yeah, it's great. An organization with roots here in Massachusetts. And one of our guests is an athlete at the next Special World Games early next year.
All right, I'm Emily Rooney.
And I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Boston Public Radio.